Science with not jokes.
Hello everyone, this is episode 8 now of Science with Knob Jokes. I'm everyone's favourite comic book nerd, Dr. Sam Godfrey. Little reference to the last podcast, if anyone's listening.
Jokes.
And I am joined by the puzzling persona that is Daisy Eyre.
Hi. Hi everyone.
Hi.
Here to puzzle and intrigue.
You are intriguing. Curious.
Weird.
An oddity.
It's been said before.
but in many ways it endears us to you.
In many ways, in all of the ways.
Hmm.
Okay, wow, rude. Ouch.
No, that was more a pause because I've lost my place.
Sure.
I wish it was me being scathing and funny, but it never actually is. For new people to the podcast, what happens is we chat about science. I scour the internet and other sources.
And other sources?
Yeah, newspapers and stuff sometimes.
You just chat to guys in the street, what science?
I have got some science on here before, which has come from scientists I've spoken to directly.
You have.
When I've cornered them.
Sorry. You say that like you're not a scientist.
Well,
I know they don't let you in a lab anymore.
No, I'm banned.
You've technically banned. Done science.
Technically done science before. Yeah. So I am, I'm Dr. Sam Godfrey. I'm an ex-scientist, shall we say. Banned from every
failed
laboratory.
Failed scientist.
Failed scientist.
He's a failed scientist.
Thanks, Daisy.
Yep.
And we have Daisy Eyre, a failed theologian.
No, I just didn't want to do it.
What's new in the world of theology?
Oh, you know, this and that. Jesus.
He's new in theology, is he?
Wow. Do you know what? I haven't really kept up with it. I won't tell a lie.
Do they have regular, like...
meetups?
No, I'm thinking like publications and journals.
Yes, of course they do. What do you think they do with their time?
I don't know.
Oh, my God. Yes. Yes, there are journals.
Like Dead Sea Scrolls and stuff.
There are conferences. There's all sorts.
Wow. You live and learn.
It's like any other academic discipline.
I think one day I want to have you do a little theology section on this just for...
I can.
Can you?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Next week.
Okay.
You're on.
No.
Right. So we're going to... What we do is we chat about stuff that grabs our interest. Daisy decides, really, as the arbiter of...
Well, as the arbiter of science.
As the arbiter of science.
I'm the arbiter of science.
She decides what we ought to do. And for that matter, I'm going to do a break from tradition. I'm going to dive... Instead of going into fit science like usual, I want you to fix a science problem for us.
I will be able to do that, so that's fine.
I want to talk about the power of machines, and in particular, and I'm not talking about machines as in like tractors and stuff. I'm talking about computational machines, and how they have the abilities now to evolve and to learn and to grow. They can be set free to tackle problems and come up with their own solutions. And a great example of this was in the Chinese game Go, which for our listeners that might not have heard this, a few years ago, the best computers would struggle to beat an average Go player because it's got so many different combinations. Now Google's DeepMind, I think it was, beat the best Chinese player. The Chinese player said it was like playing a god. It was doing moves that he didn't make any sense, and it won in just a few hours, whereas these games normally last several days. And this was a game that was thought to be beyond computers just a few years ago. The world of AI is becoming extraordinary, and it means that we're now getting to a point where machines, they're going to be capable of original thought. They're going to be better at it than us, faster than us, coming up with solutions that we can't comprehend. As AI gets more advanced, it's going to be able to process the surroundings around it far quicker than we ever could. And at what point does this relationship start to become difficult? Because what if AI decides something's not in our best interest and decides, therefore, that we're not going to do this thing? And all of a sudden, humans are being overruled by machines. Mm. It's a very scary, potentially, but confusing world.
It's sort of scary,
world.
Exciting, isn't it?
Yeah. And so I thought... This is a difficult problem. Mm. There's a lot of debate. Who better to tell the world how to fix AI than our very own Daisy Eyre?
Well, I think, basically, if they start getting out of control, just take the plug out.
Have you not seen The Matrix?
No.
Right, in the film The Matrix...
I have, that's why everyone's seen The Matrix.
Yeah, in the film The Matrix, they tried to get rid of the machine's powers. Machines used humans as batteries, didn't they?
Oh, shit. I hadn't accounted for that, had I?
No. I mean, if any time in humanity's history have we depended on your wisdom more, I don't know about it.
Well, I suppose it's this thing, isn't it, of, you know, do you make it so that these machines have free will, or do you make it so that they always have to default to a
person?
To a person.
That person better be good.
Well, it better be me. That's what I'm saying.
Is it?
Ultimately,
so
yeah.
You're wanting to be the heart of the machine.
Yeah.
Which I believe is back to the Matrix again, because isn't that in like episode 2 or 3 of it, where like there's a central human.
I didn't watch all
human.
Of the Matrix.
I think I did.
I just watched the first one.
I was disappointed by the other two.
Well, yeah. I think I'd, you know, just go with drinking by then, so.
Oh, you're so street and cool.
They always say that.
Yeah. Okay, so you think humans at the heart of it, human fail-safe.
Yeah, basically. I think, you know, it's about whether you give these machines agency, isn't it? And I think you can give them the tools to develop their thinking, as it were.
Mm.
But it's whether they are then empowered to use it.
What if, and bearing in mind we can't understand some of the things they develop, if it goes, excuse me, Daisy, just want to check this piece of code with you. Is this all right? And you look and go, yeah, that looks pretty harmless to me. Turns out it's not at all harmless, it's just beyond what we can physically comprehend.
Well, I think then it's about understanding the output of the decision, isn't it? Rather than the code, it's about the output of the code.
Don't let them have factories. They can have everything else, but they can't build their own machines.
Yeah, I think ultimately, as long as you can, you know, power it down, it's probably fine.
It's tricky though, isn't it?
I think it's really exciting that we have all these capabilities, and I think there's, you know, loads of applications that are really useful. But I think, you know, you've got to, the people who are developing these now in this sort of early stage have got to make sure they're working by a really strict code of ethics.
Well, which doesn't exist, I don't think. Could you imagine?
No.
Just sending it to all the tech companies. Guys,
I've written you some ethics.
It's scrawled. There's spelling mistakes in this.
I think we've just got to go by a really strict ethical code. I think that's the thing. For all that a machine can, you know, make decisions and learn and grow, it can't feel, can it?
Not yet.
Well, I don't think it'll ever be able to. Not in the way that a human can. I think that's why you've got to always revert back to the human. So I think this, I don't really know anything about this. I'm just really pontificating off the basis of no knowledge. I think it's probably about the human and the machine working together rather than separately in an isolation.
Yeah. Like a symbiosis. Mm. So if the machine is always an extension of a human
rather than a separate entity.
Yeah. Well, there we go.
Okay, problem solved.
Well done, Daisy.
You can all invoice me later for that.
That's anyone, copyrighted.
If anyone wants me to consult, that's fine. I understand that was really wise.
Fit Science. Yeah.
So this is dark fit science, I think. There's a company called Nectome.
What does that mean?
And it's some of the scariest Frankenstein science I've heard for a while, I think. They are a small startup company, and what their plan is to do is to preserve brains right down to the individual synapse. So if you have a thought, say you think banana, your brain will flash a certain sort of, like a set of pattern of neurons will light up, which will show you the image of the banana. And that's why you get better at doing stuff if you practice, because the pathway that does it starts to get more and more ingrained.
So the more I think about bananas, the more I'll see.
The better your visualization will be of it. And it's also why if people have brain damage, they can suddenly lose whole chunks of memory, because it might be a single connection is broken and it cuts off all these like neuronal branches. So it's really fascinating. So their theory is that if you could preserve a brain down to individual synapse and map that using really advanced computing and things, you could put it into a computer and then be able to access someone's memories, be able to see how they think, talk to them and things.
Nope.
Right, okay. Nope already. It's about to get more nope. That as soon as you die, your brain starts to degrade. So the best way to do this is to preserve it while someone is living. So they've already had 100 people have signed up to basically have, it's like formaldehyde, it's not, it's but it's something similar, to be pumped through their beating heart to preserve their brain, then be frozen down. And then at some point in the future when technology gets there, you'd then be able to map the brain and they would be able to live forever as an intellect on the machine, but you have to be killed by them in order to do this.
No, thank you.
Right. So, fit or not, Daisy?
No.
Is this the most horrified you've ever been on this podcast?
Is an ugly, ugly person. That's... No.
No.
I don't really know what else to tell you that one.
You beat them with a bar stool.
I'm repulsed by this.
Wow. No, this is not my specialist area, but instantly I thought the brain is more than just the pattern of connections, because even if they could do it, and I really think it's very icky. I mean, what's wrong with just enjoying life and living for now and then dying and, you know, you had a great life?
That's what I always think. I think become comfortable with death. Like, it's fine.
Yeah, totally.
God, that was dark, sorry.
well, it's all right. You once thought the Tin Man had no soul, so... We're used to your dark goth-like ways. Daisy's currently wearing a full-length black trench coat, listening to Morrissey.
To Morrissey, he's a racist.
Is he? Oh, he
is. Yeah, he's done racism again recently.
Oh, has he done it again? Yeah. No one likes Morrissey.
No.
So, yeah, anyway, MIT originally backed this, but they've now stepped away because the company made claims like within a century we'll be able to read people's like thoughts on the internet. And so, let's say you signed up for this. Let's say they got around the laws and they did this to your brain. The first ones are going to be shit, right? They're going to be terrible. People go, oh, do you hear that? Derek's online now. Let's go and chat to him. It's like, hi, Derek, how are you?
Hi.
Very slow.
Yeah. It's like, do you remember that?
Yeah.
Brilliant. Yeah,
I can't see it be stimulating conversation.
No.
I mean, that's the least of the problems with this, to be honest, isn't it? That they might not be so fun to talk to after they're dead. But I just think, no, like, we already have people flying off the handle with good reason that, you know, companies hold too much data on them, right? And they're misusing it.
God, what they can do with your whole brain?
What are we going to do with the whole brain? You're not going to be around to stop them, except on the computer, and you can't get out of there, can you? So they could misuse your entire bank of memories. They could do anything with that after you've given it to them. And more to the point, they've killed you to get it.
Yeah, well, it's your family that get it. It's like, imagine you get targeted adverts for that thing that you really wanted, and it's based on the fact that your dad remembers you really wanting that in a window once.
Exactly.
That's freaky. This has basically got a huge amount of, I believe it's scientifically referred to as ickiness factor.
Yeah, I feel gross about this.
All right, well, that one is a no. Next one.
What gave you the impression?
Using DNA to store computer data.
Okay, data heavy today.
Oh, you're data heavy.
We love a bit of data.
Yeah, all right.
It's like Cambridge Analytica in here.
So, DNA is a code.
Right.
Binary data that's used to make... Well, you're listening to this podcast, basically it's a stream of zeros and ones that turns into my rather husky and sultry voice.
Your devastating tones.
Devastatingly sexy. That's hashtag devastatingly sexy.
Yes, it is.
SWKJ, everyone, just in case. So binary is quite an inefficient way, I suppose, of interface. It's basically on off.
I've always
said
it.
And it's not very efficient. Whereas DNA, with its for each base, you've got four potential states. So, whereas in binary, for each base, you've got two potential states. So it's much, much bigger. And the amount of data you can get into a small space is huge. So I saw a demonstration of a man who recorded a short video. Gave it to some scientists who are Dr. Nick Goldman, that's the man's name, and he has developed a code which turns binary into the letters of DNA. Right. And they then sent this off to a company in the US who turned it into real DNA. And then the man said, this held up a little tiny test tube, went, this is your video in this little splash of liquid. And then they took that splash of liquid, reverse engineered it back, and reconstructed, and it was the exact video, and it was perfect.
Super weird.
And so it was really cool. Now, based on their calculations, you could store all the data that exists on the internet in something the size of a shoebox. Whereas data warehousing currently now is huge.
Smart, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, that seems useful. Yeah, I'm into it.
Useful.
On it.
That's a lot of code that you can put in there.
Hi.
Hiya. Are you about to go on to record? So I was partway through talking about how they took a video and turned it into DNA code using an algorithm.
Yes, I do remember this.
And for listeners, this is being recorded a couple of weeks after the last one.
Sorry.
Remembers this after 3 minutes ago.
So
DNA is of such storage capacity that they then calculated that you could take all the data that exists on the internet and store it in something the size of a shoebox.
Oh, that would be great. The storage solutions.
Yeah.
Interior design possibility.
So you need a fridge to keep your data safe. But obviously this isn't a practical storage solution yet because it takes time to convert DNA. But it does show that you can store data in much, much smaller levels. And biology has a very, very, very good system for doing this. So in the future, maybe 20 years time or so, perhaps long-term data may be stored on DNA chips. Who knows? I just thought it was an interesting
future look. I think it's good because it's a big problem, isn't it? Data storage.
It is.
So I think, you know, go for it.
Data warehousing is a problem.
So if we can keep it all in the fridge.
Yeah.
Next to the beer.
Or find a way of not using a fridge for the DNA. Living life forms.
So you want me to eat the DNA?
No. I'm thinking we clone into living life forms and then, like, go, oh, that flock of heron, that's got the information for the next space shuttle.
Right, that sounds dangerous. Because if you have the flock of heron and they're just out there living their lives and they die...
Oh, crap. You could freeze one.
You want to freeze a heron?
Could have just frozen the DNA directly, but no, I'm going for the heron storage.
You're going for heron, aren't you? No, I think it's just easier to freeze the DNA.
I wonder what the interface would be like as well. It's like, oh, I need to back up my DVDs. Could you go get me
get
me a heron? Just plug that into my laptop.
It sounds messy.
It does sound. I think this hasn't been thought through.
Worst. By you?
By me. I'm sure Dr. Nick Goldman's done a hell of a lot better job.
And I think the BBC guy knows what he's doing.
He's all over it.
But you have brought a heron into this. And it's all gone wrong, hasn't it?
I can only apologise to the world of science.
For this and for many other things.
just in general. I'm not going to be specific with my, but that's just an open apology.
Sorry, science.
For everything I've done. Okay, so what do you think of that little bit of science?
Good. Yeah, I liked it. I think it's
so in depth.
You've just brought a heron into this. I think that was actually quite a sensible answer. I think it sounds really smart. I think as long as we don't put it into a flock of heron, then I don't see why we wouldn't do this more. Great.
So, great.
Stock up on fridges. Let's go for
this.
This
is the future.
Yeah.
Great. And you wouldn't even need that much fridges if a shoebox can hold the whole world.
Pop it in the ice tray.
There you go.
Great.
This is going to be good. Or have a cooling unit built into your computer.
Or that, yeah.
Oh, see, I'm back on track now, aren't I?
There we are.
Rescue myself from the heron fiasco.
There we
heron gate.
As we'll call it in the future.
Sam's meaty story.
So, have you heard much about the microbiome?
God, I'm sick of hearing about it.
So the microbiome is our interaction with bacteria. So whilst we consider ourselves human, and actually with good reason we are, by latest calculations, only about 43% human. Rest of us is microorganisms. So they used to say we were actually as little as 10% human if in terms of cell numbers. That now has been revised upwards, but the rest of our body is
I'm less than half human.
Yes, so the rest of you is viruses, fungi, bacteria, and these things called archaea, which are sort of like primitive bacteria.
So not even like advanced bacteria.
You would probably
bacteria.
You're primitive, really dumb.
Stupid.
Now, archaea are an amazing thing by themselves. Like, you know when you see like things, life at deep sea vents, which is like 300 degrees centigrade, it's archaea that are living there. They're the life forms that can survive in the most extreme conditions.
Including inside
the human body, which is actually a pretty nice condition for bacteria. But yeah, we are teeming with bacteria. And that in itself has a huge influence to us. So we have about 20,000 genes which shape our body. But we also have this microbiome genome as well, which is the genes of all the bacteria. And that genuinely plays into, it sort of augments our own genetics. And they're now seeing some incredible effects of it. So there was a study a couple of years back where they took mice that had been raised in a completely bacteria-free settings. They had no microbiome of their own. And then they transplanted in feces from...
God, what a rude awakening.
Yes.
Look at your lovely clean environment.
Yeah.
Some poo.
It pretty much was that. So they put some poo in these. And they put poo in from people who were either morbidly overweight or who were very, very lean. And the mice then, continuing living in the same conditions, actually took on those weight properties.
Oh my
god. So these normal mice became either lean or
really
big,
fat.
Really fat mice. And that was the effects of this microbiome
That's
on them.
Amazing.
And they've now seen these cases in humans where they can treat severe gut infections with, I think I mentioned it before on the podcast, fecal transplants.
How would I know, Sam? You know, I'm like a goldfish.
Yeah.
Forget as soon as I leave the room.
Yeah, just instantly wipe the memory. Yeah. It's probably safest that way. So There was a woman, she had chronic diarrhoea caused by Clostridium difficile, which is an infectious bacteria. She had it for 8 months, and in that time she lost 27 kilos in weight.
Wow.
Which, for our American friends, that's 60 pounds. And then they gave her a sample of poo from her husband. 2 days later, she was fixed. It solved the problem.
I bet when they suggested it to her, though, she was like, oh.
I think after 8 months...
Do I want to recover that badly?
After 8 months of basically weeing out your bum, you're gonna want to try something.
You've got such a way with words.
It's beautiful, isn't it?
That was lovely.
It's almost poetic.
That was nothing.
But there have been examples, and I don't know whether this is like clinically proven or it's just anecdotal, but there have been examples of someone having this fecal transplant and then suddenly gaining an awful lot of weight because the person they took the transplant from was someone who was overweight. There seems to be an awful lot of interplay between these creatures that live within us and us self.
I've read about it actually in the context of neurological illness. And there's a lot of interplay, I think, between the brain and the gut.
Yeah.
Which I think is... it's just mad.
Mad. It's
they're not even near each other.
They're not, no.
But you'd just never think to look, would you?
No, well, this is what people are beginning to do now. So they're beginning to identify types of bacteria which are associated with things. So there's one called Oscillospira, which people with more of that tend to be leaner in general. There's one called Ruminococcus, which reduces the risk of allergies. They've known for a while that children that are born to a house with a dog are less likely to have asthma.
Mm.
And they think this could be because the bacteria from the dog constantly challenge their immune system and therefore actually suppress this sort of autoimmune type of response, this overreaction that you see with allergies. So, but all of this is kind of new and a bit speculative. So they're now doing something called baby biome, where they're collecting poo samples from 80,000 babies. And also at the same time, history about what decisions were taken at those babies' birth. Were they given antibiotics? Were they breastfed? Were they formula fed? All of these different conditions. And try and build a snapshot of what creates different gut microenvironments, different microbiomes. And then from that, they're going to look and see what the effects are on people's lives. So do babies that were given antibiotics early on in life, are they more likely or less likely to have certain conditions? Is their microbiome different accordingly? I mean, one of the things with cesareans, for example, is babies that are born naturally are normally born face down so that they get a healthy dose of bacteria on the way out. That's
it's a horrible thought, but
it's lovely, yeah. But that's what they do, and that dose of mother's bacteria is the first bacteria the baby gets for their life. So babies born by cesarean don't get this. So there's talk about, should we be seeding the baby when they're born with the mother's bacteria so they get that natural
bacteria boost?
Exactly. I mean, there's obviously got to be careful because not all bacteria are good. You get the balance wrong and people are in serious trouble. Strep B, for example, on babies is really, really dangerous.
I don't think it's great for anyone.
Well, I think it lives on like 50% of people's skin naturally.
God, I'm learning so much today. Just not something I usually say in this podcast.
Oh, I'm pleased with myself.
I'll let throw you a bone now and then.
Thank you very much. This is a very interesting world because it's potentially interplaying with other diseases. It's our general well-being, how we live our lives. All these things could be shaped by these little tiny critters that live inside us. And so if we can work out exactly what a healthy microbiome looks like, we can start to create that for people, and it would be like the ultimate health boost for newborns, like setting them up as a good human.
That's amazing. I also really like, I think this is very noble science, because I bet the scientists when they got into science did not think this is what they'd be doing.
Just
collecting poo
samples.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, well done to them, because that sounds really unglamorous.
So if you had to rate this little bit of science.
Well, this is so hard for me. This is the hardest part. I believe there's a scientific unit called a mole.
There is.
Thank you. See?
Well done.
A lot going on in there. And you can have as many as 38 moles.
Can you? Are you talking concentration or just in general?
Yeah, concentration, obviously.
Because okay. If it's concentration, that's extremely concentrated solution.
Yes, it is.
this is a big... You're right. It's a good upper limit.
Yeah. So that was what I was thinking. A highly concentrated solution has 38 moles in it.
Yeah.
Obviously.
Yeah.
Why would you question me?
I wouldn't.
Thank you. I would give that piece of science 37.
Oh, that's high.
Well, I just think the potential is so great.
Yeah, I agree.
You can do so much with that. And it doesn't just affect one thing. It affects so many different illnesses, mental health, physical health.
Yep.
All sorts. People for all ages. It's science for all the family, isn't it?
You're right, yeah. Who'd have thought that poo science would be for all the family?
But I wouldn't have, but yet. But I don't want to give it, you know, top marks because...
Well, you don't know what
there's
I'm going
to
bring next
week.
There's
still worlds left to conquer, isn't there?
Yeah, exactly. You don't know what I'm going to roll out next time.
Exactly. So I want to, I want to give myself somewhere to go.
Gosh.
But I did like that.
That was good.
And I didn't expect to.
Would you say you're a poo fan now?
No.
Oh. Great. I'm going to do the knob joke now. So this is one I've not written down, so this is going to be
Oh, God, Sam. Why make this worse than it has to be?
So, man goes, man's going to the toilet, he's having a wee, in the urinal. All of a sudden, man goes like, mate, what are you doing? You've sprayed me. Guy on his left hand side says, dude, you sprayed me. He looks down, wee is coming out in every direction. He's like, what on earth is going on here? This doesn't seem right. So he goes to the doctor, and gets to the doctor. He's like, doctor, I've got a real problem. When I urinate, like, the wee just seems to come out in all directions. And she said, well, I'm going to have a look at your penis, so let's have a look. And she examines it, and she gets out a magnifying glass, and she's looking and going, this is really strange. You've got all these holes all down the side of your penis, all over it. I've never seen anything like this. And the man's like, oh, God, what does this mean? What does it mean? She goes, don't worry, let me sort you out. So she goes to a desk, gets a piece of paper, and writes a telephone number on it, and goes, this is a man called Stephen, a friend of mine. Give him a call. Is that some kind of penis specialist doctor? No, he's a recorder player. He'll show you how to hold it.
Oh, God.
Okay. Did you like that one?
I mean, it was better than most of them, yeah. I liked it because it was quite unexpected.
This has just been a roaring success this last 5 minutes. I mean, you've learnt stuff. You thought something I said was interesting. You've laughed at my knob joke.
I know. This is really why you set this podcast up, isn't it? So I'd laugh at your joke.
I'm actually, like, probably as high as I've ever been in terms of...
That's so sad.
This is the top five moments of my life right now.
Really? Is it sad?
Oh, God. What do you think? I mean, look at me.
top three.
This has been extraordinary. I was going to do another piece of science, but I'm not going to. I'm going to end on a high.
All right.
I'm going to save this for now because I don't think I can top you enjoying a knob joke.
I'm going to walk directly out the room after this so I don't ruin this for you by saying something else.
I mean, in a way, that kind of ruined it. Well, that is our little show for you all this week. If you want to get in touch with us...
Don't. No, you can.
You can. I'm at ScienceManSam on Twitter.
And I'm at DaisyGrace88.
Also on Twitter.
obviously.
Yeah, obviously. And we'll be back again shortly. And in the meantime, happy sciencing.
No.
Is that a good sign off?
No, it's terrible.
Oh.